It's time for the Rink Rats with your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. Man, oh man, it's the off season, and you know, it was funny because we were sitting, I was texting you earlier before we came in to do this, and I asked you if there was anything that you wanted to talk about, because really not much has happened. Like, Eric Karlsson's still an Ottawa Senator, Max Pacioretty's still a Montreal Canadian. We'll get to that later. But we kind of like forced some ideas out there. And then Vadim Shipachev decides to
take a dump on the city of Las Vegas.
Shit on Las Vegas, shit on the Golden Knights. And it couldn't have happened at a better time, really, because now we have something to open the show with. Vadim Shipachev hates Las Vegas.
Yeah. I went from having nothing really to talk about, but I mean, there are always things to talk about, but nothing that I really, really can't wait to talk about, to having maybe the thing I'm most excited to talk about in the history of the Rink Rats show.
So you read the quotes, right?
Google translated.
Sure.
Which is awful.
I mean,
it makes him sound like Borat.
Yeah, but I don't think we lost too much of the sentiment in translation. So which thing stood out to you the most?
To me, the thing that stood out the most was, so just for those that aren't up to date, that haven't seen this, Vadim Shipachev in Russia did an interview in Russian about his time in Las Vegas, and he complained about pretty much everything from the coaching staff to the management to being sent down to the AHL and about living in Las Vegas as a whole. And yeah, to me, that was the part that shocked me.
So,
because every player I've talked to, and this isn't me interviewing them for a story and them saying, yeah, I love Las Vegas, it's great, because of course they're going to say that.
Right, exactly.
This is me talking to players off the record. Just every single guy I've talked to loves Las Vegas. And every guy I've talked to has said that the perception of Las Vegas around the NHL is that everyone wants to be here,
right,
because it's awesome.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with the on-the-ice success. It's just the city of Las Vegas. So for Shipachev to come out and say how awful the city was just blows my mind.
So here's the quote that Jesse's talking about. This is Vadim Shipachev. Bear with me. It's translated, but I'm going to give it my best shot. In Vegas, it's hard to live. You can come here for a week for fun, but it's impossible to live. We rented a house in a good, I thought, neighborhood, but there's nothing there and there is no one. You go out onto the street, it's empty, as if you live alone in this village.
Like, that is my favorite line of the entire interview.
As if you live alone
in this village.
I don't think there's any place in Vegas that I've been to. And like, I live over on Blue Diamond and Decatur, so it's a little bit less crowded than a lot of the different suburbs around town. There's some farmhouses, there's some things going on there. I've never felt in Vegas like I was living alone in a village, but then again, I maybe it's different in Russia. I don't know.
Yeah, so now what this does for me is it paints an image of Russia where when you walk outside, there are just people. Like,
it's a party in the streets.
Like, yeah, there are just people like hanging their clothes on like clotheslines. Like, I'm picturing he lives in a village similar to that of Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
Where everyone's just walking down the street and singing. And
oh, man,
that's what I picture in Russia.
His life
now
is a musical.
Yes.
That's what it is. So he goes on to say, once I took the children to the water park, I had to go through the casino. So I had to clamp my nose with my hand so that they would not inhale thick tobacco smoke. Well, yes, there is the strip. It is possible to walk along it one way and the other. So what? Gambling does not interest me at all, and there's nothing more there. See, that's the part that pisses me off. There's nothing more in Vegas other than gambling. You were a part of the thing! You were a part of the thing that changed that!
I don't understand what there is in Russia. Pretend gambling was illegal. Let's just pretend for a second gambling's illegal. It doesn't exist in Las Vegas.
Right.
The strip has only the non-gambling aspects. So just the awesome day clubs, the nightclubs, the shows,
the restaurants,
all that.
Mm-hmm.
What does Russia have that Vegas does not have is what I'm trying to figure out. Other than people singing in the streets.
I don't know, man. I honestly can't understand that mindset. Like, you're brought in here, and I understand that it's going to be a culture clash, and it's going to be a little bit different bringing your family over here to North America, just like it's a little bit different to play the game, and we'll get into those quotes later. But what I don't understand is you're brought into this situation, and you're aware that Vegas has this reputation as Sin City, as the place where you go to just forget about all of your actual responsibilities, and the perception has been all year that Vegas is just what Vegas is, and this is the first time in the history of Las Vegas where an identity outside of those hedonistic things is present, and you were a part of that. To say that there's nothing there when you were actively building that from the ground up and you could have been a part of that makes no sense to me. I just don't understand that line of thinking. I don't get it.
I can understand the culture shock as well, but the way he talks about cigarette smoke, like it's chemical warfare, whereas if he walked through a casino without holding his nostrils shut, then he could die instantly. Did he not live? Like, I don't know Russia all that well. He played for the biggest team in Russia, SKA St. Petersburg, which I would assume is in a major city like Moscow, or I don't even know.
Well, St. Petersburg.
I'm guessing it's, yeah, in a major city. The way he's speaking of Las Vegas, there's a road that you can walk on either side of. He's making it sound like he came from an Amish village where there is no electricity or running water.
But see, that completely mitigates his first point where he walks out of his house and he's in a village where he's by himself. Because if that's the case, like
No, but Amish people are always outside because there's no TV to watch.
Well, I guess that's true. Because
Amish people are always out. They have to till the farm and stuff.
There's a lot here. There's a lot here.
I'm just like, after reading that, I don't think Russia and Las Vegas, I mean, are that different as far as,
well, nobody it's smokes, a big city. Nobody smokes in Russia,
right? Yeah, that's
right?
Complete like, no lie. One at all. I would assume Russians smoke more than Americans, and that's me stereotyping Russia the way he's stereotyping Las Vegas. But the culture shock is, yeah, people here don't speak the same language as you. That's going to be weird. But he's acting like it's a completely different world than Russia. And like I said, I'm imagining him being in a major city in Russia,
right,
which should be fairly similar to Las Vegas.
I really like this perception that Vegas is so much different than every other major city throughout the world blows my mind.
These guys, like, he lived in Summerlin.
Yeah.
He went to the practice facility every
day
to practice, just like all the other players did. Like, if he's talking about the Strip, like, he might have spent more time on the Strip than all the other players combined then, because most of them don't really go down there.
I mean, somebody should have told him that Wet n Wild, you don't have to go through a casino to get there. So, like, maybe if he just went to Wet n Wild,
yeah, what,
or Cowabunga.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Where did he even go?
Yeah, what water park do you have to, because those are the only two water parks in town.
They're
right?
The only two that I know of.
Unless he's just talking about a,
like, going to a pool or something like that.
Which you would have to go through a casino, most of them.
Well, right, but even then,
why is he taking his kids to Dre's?
Why are you doing that? Just go to the freaking Wet n Wild. What are you doing?
I don't know. But I just feel like he is using every stereotype against Vegas.
Sure.
Because it's the easy out.
And, like, how much more ridiculous are these claims now after, like, what you were talking about earlier, talking to every single player all year long, talking about how much their perception of Vegas has changed, how much of a thriving community this is, how much different they thought it would be and where it is now. Like, how hollow do these words ring for you now that you've been through that, that you know how most of these guys feel about the city?
I mean, like I said, I have yet to talk to someone that even remotely wasn't thrilled with Vegas. I'm trying to pull up my story with Paul Stastny's quote, mm-hmm. a guy who, because, okay, I wrote a story about midway through the year where Belmar gave me some really good stuff about how all the guys love living so close to the practice facility. It's an awesome facility.
Mm-hmm.
How none of them knew what Vegas was before they came here. Now they realize it's an actual city. Summerlin is awesome. They love it. But that's Belmar. He plays for the Golden Knights. He has a reason to. Paul Stastny the quote he gave me was, if I can find it in my own story.
Good God.
Come on. Damn it. I can't find it.
It's, well, was it, I mean, I'm assuming it was positive.
Yes. He essentially said, I know people that live in that have lived in Las Vegas for a long time that have told me it's awesome. It's a great city. Everyone I've talked to in the NHL has told me good things.
Right.
And that wasn't the sole reason that I chose Vegas. Oh, here we go. I did ask around from a few guys that have played in Las Vegas or guys I know or that know guys that have played there.
Right.
I know a few people that have lived in the area for 7 or 8 years, even before the team got there, and have always said good things about Vegas. Sometimes, from an outsider perspective, all you think about is the Strip, but the way of living is an easy settle and how good the community is out there. I haven't heard one thing negative, and that's before the hockey team got there, and I'm just talking with the hockey guys. I've heard only positive things. When you hear that, it makes it easier to make a decision like this.
Well, of course it's a great place to live. You're on an island. You're out there without any neighbors. No one is there. You're on in this village that's by yourself.
Yeah. When I read that quote from Shipachev about it as if you're alone in this village, it reminds me of like a end of the world movie, like 28 days later.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you're just walking down the street and there's like newspapers blowing down the road because, and there's just like,
maybe he got lost. Like maybe he went too far north on the 15 and just decided to make a house there. I have no idea. It just makes no sense to me. Now,
so let's go to the hockey stuff.
Let's get to the hockey stuff. So here's a quote that I thought was pretty interesting because he talks about adapting to the NHL, right? It says, when I played 3 matches, I thought that in the future it will be better. I was ready to be on the ice for 10 minutes in the third or fourth lines. I did not see anything terrible in this. I understood very well that I still needed to get used to the NHL to adapt. Still, I've never played in such a league, and if I were given this time, then I would be used to it. It's clear that in North America, the game is played with more power and less space, but I felt I was progressing. Agree or disagree?
I think he could have progressed if he was willing to put in the work, but he didn't want to.
See, and that's the other thing that I found really interesting. I did not understand this because I did not go to the NHL for money. I'm not interested in playing in the AHL. And that was another quote from Shipachev. And that's the crux of this issue. Because if he felt he could have gotten better, go to the AHL and prove it. That is why a lot of guys cut their teeth in that league to learn the North American game. It's why we had that big debate about whether or not Eric Brandstrom needs to come over here and either play junior or play in the AHL, but he's got to come over here and learn how to play the NHL North American style game.
Yep.
And Shipachev talked about the differences, and you know what? For a guy that's not the biggest guy in the world, that maybe doesn't have the best skating or the best power, he needed to get in. He needed to get ready and acclimated to this game. He was unwilling to do the things that he needed to do to make that happen.
On a team full of guys that have made their bread and butter being that way.
Exactly. It wasn't going to work. And the thing in here, we're going to get to the quote where he talked about Gallant and McPhee, and I love this one. Yes. We constantly talked with the head coach, with an assistant, but you know how it is in America. Vadim, we are satisfied with everything. Then you are growing great. Everything is great. And then they tell me that I am not needed. In Russia, they tell you what's unhappy. They'll say it in person, and you start working on some things.
So he's saying that in Russia, they
tell you why you suck.
And in America, they sugarcoat everything and basically lie to you.
I don't understand how you can sugarcoat you're going to the AHL to work on your game.
Yeah.
There's no sugarcoating that.
And then the other issue is, say, if you want to play devil's advocate and argue on Shipachev's side, you say, well, this guy was the star player of the KHL. He came over here. He's above the AHL. That's beneath him. Which, my argument then goes to, Alex Tuch and Shea Theodore are both significantly better hockey players than Vadim Shipachev. And if there's a person out there listening to this that wants to argue that, you are a moron. You are a complete idiot. Vadim Shipachev is not as good as Alex Tuch or Shea Theodore.
Completely agree.
They both went down to the AHL for weeks. It wasn't just one game.
Right.
It was a few weeks to start the season. And what did they do? They produced.
Right.
They played outstanding. They didn't say a word. They did what they were supposed to do. They did as the organization directed them. And then, what do you know? They tore it up in the AHL.
Right.
They came up to the NHL a few weeks later. Was it really that big of a deal that they missed the first few weeks of the season? No. They helped the Golden Knights in the playoffs. Obviously, some mishaps in the final. But two guys that were 21-year-old rookies that now have cemented themselves as NHL players. All because they just did what McPhee asked them to do.
But how could they do that if there was so much mistruth going around?
Yeah. It's Shipachev. He won't say it, but I believe the AHL he thinks is beneath him. And clearly wasn't, because not only did he not produce in the NHL and was awful in practice here, but he goes back to Russia, ends up getting benched with his Russian team that he was a star of,
right.
Is a healthy scratch for the Russian Olympic team, couldn't get on the ice, and now has been not re-signed by SKA St. Petersburg and is with some garbage team over in Russia.
So what you're trying to say is maybe the Russian coaches that are over there on his team now have taken a page from the North American book and they're not telling him what he sucks at so that he can get better.
Maybe.
He just sucks at hockey.
He's not that good at hockey, and he was playing on a team that is, the league is rigged for it to win because Vladimir Putin wants it to.
He doesn't rig anything.
No, that really happened.
No,
Well, he rigged our election too, but we're not going to get into that.
We probably should stay away from that, I would say.
No, but that's a real thing. Like a reporter, a legit reporter in Russia, made this whole story about how essentially every other team plays by different rules than SKA St. Petersburg.
Sure.
They sign all the biggest players. They have players who are making more than other teams are allowed to spend on their entire roster. And it's essentially just rigged for this team to just
steamroll,
just destroy everyone in the league. And oh, crazy. Shipachev looks good playing for that team. It's amazing.
Of course he does.
And another team is about to find out this horrible truth, and that's the LA Kings down the road.
Yeah. Oh,
because
man.
We're going to see if a guy that hasn't played real competitive hockey in 8 years can score 30 goals a year, which I seriously doubt.
Kovalchuk's just not going to be fast enough to keep up. I don't see it.
He's old, and like I said, it's not quite this extreme, but I think the closest example is the Harlem Globetrotters.
Okay, go ahead.
It's not a competition.
Sure.
They're playing against teams that have no chance. That is what teams playing for SKA St. Petersburg in Russia, that's the example. Your team is stacked. You're playing with all the players on your team are better than the other team. You don't have to be that good. You're going to be in great positions. It's easy for you. Then you come over here and all of a sudden you're on the LA Kings where not only are you not better than the other team, the other team's better than you.
Exactly.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And you're 38 or however old he is.
He's 35, but
35.
Basically.
And he hasn't played in the NHL in forever. It's going to be a disaster. But we're getting away from the Shipachev thing. But yeah, I just think Shipachev was not as good of a hockey player as and that's on the Golden Knights scouting staff thinking he was that good. That was a failure on their part.
So how concerned are you about Cody Glass then? Not being
No, that's two totally different scouts. Completely different scouting departments.
Okay.
I mean, you have international scouts, you have professional scouts, which are scouting guys that are going to be UFAs and then you've got your juniors scouts
You're not concerned about that in any way, shape, or form.
Cody Glass is better than Vadim Shipachev right now, and he's 18.
I agree with that.
So yeah,
but then again, Shipachev didn't really set the bar too high. Now, do you believe him when he said that he was comfortable or fine playing 10 minutes a night in a third or fourth line role? Because something about that just doesn't really hold true to me.
I don't know. Yeah, I believe him. I think it was more about I want to be in the NHL. I want to be on an NHL team. I believe he thinks the AHL is beneath him. And I think as long as he was playing in the NHL, he wouldn't have thrown a hissy fit and gone home.
See, I don't agree with that, because I think if he would have been demoted to the fourth line, not that that would ever have happened, because you have your fourth line and you have the guys on there that you want on there for a certain reason. But if that third line ended up playing 5-6 minutes a night, I think Vadim Shipachev would have had a big, big problem with that. Because how much better is he going to get over the course of a year playing 6 minutes a night? He's not. Maybe.
You might be right. I don't know.
I don't necessarily, with these comments, it's really difficult to take anything that he says at face value. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's being honest in most of them. I just think he's telling his side, which can't blame him. I mean, of course he's going to tell his side and shade things to make himself look better. I do think that, like, and obviously I'm placing all the blame on Shipachev this
sure.
whole time.
Yeah.
There is some blame to go on George McPhee, and that is that he made it seem to Shipachev that there's no chance he's going to the AHL. And he did that intentionally, because if he would have told Shipachev in the recruiting process, hey, we may send you down to the minor league hockey team for a few weeks, Shipachev is obviously going to choose, because there were other teams that wanted him.
Sure, yeah.
There's no way he would have chosen the Golden Knights. So, of course, McPhee kept that part to himself, knowing damn well he knew it was going to be a numbers game. It's the reason Shipachev was sent down there is the same reason Tuck and Theodore were sent down there. They had too many players for their roster, and he was waiver exempt. And McPhee knew that when he was signing that contract, and he kept it a secret to Shipachev. Now, is that against the rules? Of course not. That's on Shipachev's agent
sure.
to not be tricked like that. But McPhee did trick him, essentially, into thinking he has no chance of being sent down there, and then the first thing he does is send him down there.
So there's one win for Shipachev, and there's like seven wins for George McPhee. I get it.
I
don't know, man. If playing in the NHL is so important to you that you are willing to come over here and you're willing to uproot your family, you're willing to do all these things, and you just had to go down to prove that you could adapt to this game, why wouldn't your pride take over at that point? Like, why wouldn't you say, you know what? I came over here with one goal, and that's to be a good NHL player. If I've got to go down to the AHL for a couple of weeks to prove that I can do that, why wouldn't you?
Because your pride is too much to go down there, I guess? I don't know.
Like, he's forever going to be the guy that came over here, didn't get his way, and left one of the greatest stories in sports history.
Yeah, it's hard to have a worse year than Shipachev did as an athlete. From that to getting benched on his own team up there or over there to getting he did win a gold medal. He does have a gold medal. He did
good
nothing to earn it, but he does have one.
So the final quote that I love from Shippy is this: "I forgot everything that happened last season like a terrible dream." Boo hoo.
Yeah, it appears that he doesn't handle adversity well.
No, not at all.
Because of just not only what happened with the Golden Knights, but what has happened in Russia since then. It's unfortunate, because if he would have been the top six center that the Golden Knights thought they were getting, how much better would this team be right now?
Maybe three wins better?
They'd have four stud centers now instead of only three.
Yeah, it's a good
on
point.
On the roster.
It's a good point.
But yeah, it sucks for Shipachev. It also sucks that he is a poor sport, took his toys, screw you guys, I'm going home, and then talks trash about one of the greatest cities on the earth. So
yeah, it's good stuff. Anything else, anything more on Vadim before we get into things that actually matter?
Yeah, I think I'm good. I got it all out of my system.
All right, cool. So you wrote a piece, was it last week? Did it come out last week? About UFAs and the Vegas Golden Knights, Vegas in general, being a destination. And I think your argument was lost a little bit on some people, because you got a little bit of pushback on Twitter, which we all know is a great indication of people paying attention and reading as opposed to just looking at the headline. So, Jesse Granger, tell everybody why they were wrong about your piece.
So, the main, I think, misunderstanding was I wrote that Vegas and the Golden Knights are now a destination for free agents.
Right.
The response was, we didn't get Tavares, we didn't get this guy, we didn't get James Van Riemsdyk, we didn't get this guy, we didn't. And then everybody just started listing basically every UFA that the Golden, because if you're a destination, apparently you're supposed to sign every single UFA that's available.
Well, right, because cap space.
So, first off, let me just say that the main misunderstanding is when I'm saying the Golden Knights are a destination and Vegas as a city is a free agent destination, I'm not saying it's the best destination in the entire NHL and they can get whatever player they want at whatever salary they want whenever they want. That's not what I'm saying. Right. What I'm saying is usually when a brand new team starts up in a league, regardless of what sport it is, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, doesn't matter. It's tough to get people to want to play for you because the organization is learning on the fly. You don't know how much stability there's going to be. You're not sure if the fan base is going to take. You don't know if you're going to be on your fourth head coach in 4 years if you sign a four-year contract. There's so many things that a new expansion team has to prove to players in the league before they're willing to sign, especially top players like Paul Stastny,
sure,
that have multiple options. And I think Vegas has done it unbelievably quickly. And not only because of the on-ice success. That's a huge part of it. The fact that they went to the Stanley Cup Final proves, oh, wow, these guys can win. It's worth going there. But I think more than that is the way the team has treated the players. Bill Foley gets a huge part of that.
Sure.
Ken wrote a story about Bill Foley. Kenneth Sinbin wrote a story about Bill Foley, about how they washed their cars and stuff for him. I think just the way...
What was the greatest line in that story?
About if you call him Mr. Foley, it's $1,000 fine?
No. That everything is run military style.
Yeah.
Military style.
Yep. No, but... So I think it's more than the on-ice success. I think Vegas has become a destination because the players talk in the NHL. These guys are friends with all the guys that they played with growing up. So, like, I think a lot of people think, okay, all Golden Knights players talk to Golden Knights players and all Maple Leafs players. No, that's not how it works. These guys all go back to Canada in the offseason. During the season, they're constantly texting each other. The guys that they grew up playing with, the teams that they used to play with, they all talk. I can guarantee you most players in the NHL – no, Summerlin is awesome. It's a 2-minute drive from City National Arena, which is the best practice facility in the NHL. And it takes 20 minutes to get to T-Mobile Arena, which is the best arena. Well, I guess you could argue the one in Detroit, Little Caesars, but one of the best arenas in the NHL. Plus the fan support.
Sure.
The craziness. You know you're not going to Arizona Coyotes team where you're going to play in front of an empty arena every night. So anyway, so my argument was they have proven that they are a destination sooner than expected for an expansion team. Sure. I'm not saying no other team has any chance of getting a free agent if the Golden Knights want them. That's not how it works.
Well, maybe next time when you write a piece, you should be a little bit more clear, Jesse.
Yeah. I mean, I did write that, but I should have written it five times instead of just once. But anyways, I do think because a lot of the another part of the backlash I got, there's the whole we didn't get Tavares thing, and I don't know how interested they actually were in Tavares. George McPhee didn't even go down to California to try to get him. He did phone call.
I don't know that John Tavares was the main attraction. I mean, and I've been kind of back and forth on John Tavares for a long time. I think you bring in a player of his caliber, you make your team better. I'm not arguing that, but you look at William Karlsson and what he was able to do with Marchessault and Riley Smith, and you say to yourself, do you want to pay $11 million for a number two center? Because that's what John Tavares would be. He would be your second line center. He would be getting those reps. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs, because there isn't this established line with Austin Matthews and his wingers, you have the flexibility to kind of move those two guys in between those wingers fluidly. You don't move William Karlsson from Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith. You just don't. What they had is your top line production. So you've got John Tavares coming in here who can make arguably anybody else that he plays with better, but is he going to get enough? Is he going to get enough time on the ice? Is he going to get enough reps with these other guys in order for that contract that you're going to sign him to be worth it? I don't know that it is. It's why I like the Stastny signing a little bit better, because you know that you're slotting him in probably as a second line center, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with Eric Halla. You know, you have to figure out if you're going to move him to wing, if maybe he can score more on the wing. If he's not necessarily a driver of possession, you don't necessarily need him to play center.
Or you can play him at center on the third line and have three great centers.
Well, you could do that, but then what do you do with Cody Eakin? That's going to be the question.
Fourth line winger.
But is Gerard Gallant going to move Cody Eakin down to the fourth line?
Yeah.
That's the question. You think so?
Yeah, I mean,
he probably should have done it last year.
For a guy like Stasny.
Well, that's true, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's different when you're replacing him with a guy like Stasny than like if there was like, let's put Brandon Peary in there. Like, know what I mean? Like,
that's like, true.
But, so anyways, I think that's part of the argument, the pushback I got, that the Golden Knights are a destination.
Sure.
The other part that really pisses me off is the, how are they a destination if they lost David Perron and James Neal argument? And the answer to that is they didn't want David Perron or James Neal. Otherwise, they'd still be in Vegas.
They would have gotten them.
Because I can promise you, I can 100% without a doubt in my mind, promise you, Golden Knights fans, James Neal and David Perron wanted to stay in Vegas.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And if the Golden Knights would have given them a comparable deal, they would have stayed in Vegas. The issue is, they didn't.
Well, here's the thing, because it's been reported that James Neal's offer was 5x5, which
is a lie.
Is a lie, because I don't think the Golden Knights, given the fact that they only went 3 years on Paul Stastny, would have committed that much term to James Neal.
Well, and I've been told it's a lie.
So, there you go. So, everybody, don't believe what you read on Twitter.
And this is, now, I'm not, it was reported in the Calgary Sun. I forgot the name of the reporter that wrote it, but it was the Calgary Sun that wrote it. I'm not saying that reporter is lying.
Okay.
I think maybe his source
sure
was wrong.
Because we haven't seen that in the last 2 weeks.
So, but what his story did, this is how, and like a lot of people are always asking me on Twitter, what's this? Can you guess on this? Can you guess on this? And this is the reason, as a reporter, you have to be responsible. Yeah. Because that man writing that story, saying James Neal turned down 5x5 from the Golden Knights,
right,
has single-handedly made a entire city hate a man.
Sure. Absolutely.
Everywhere I go, I get Golden Knights fans that are furious at James Neal because he took a few extra million dollars to go to Calgary, which when you do the taxes, it's actually
not
less.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
Right.
James Neal was never offered 5 years with the Golden Knights. That didn't happen.
And we can clearly see it's not about the average annual value. It wasn't about the money per year. It was going to always come down to term for James Neal. And if you look at James Neal and what he did this year and what he's done over the course of his career, can you pencil him in for 20, 25 goals? Yeah, probably. But can you do it for the next 5 years? I don't think so.
And his defense is only going to get worse.
Only going to get worse.
So the argument is we're not a destination because we let those two go. That's because they wanted to let them go. McPhee could have offered James Neal and Perron comparable contracts to what St. Louis and Calgary gave them, and they would have stayed. The problem is McPhee is worried about the cap in a couple of years,
sure,
and didn't want Perron for four, which is what St. Louis gave him, and didn't want Neal for five, which is what Calgary gave him. James Neal did not take a similar contract in Calgary and leave Vegas to go there. I can tell you that with 100% certainty. So stop getting mad at James Neal for that.
And then the other thing that you really have to consider in all this is you've got a Nick Suzuki and a Cody Glass that at the time of this recording are still members of the Golden Knights franchise. They're going to be ready soon. You don't want them to have to fight for minutes with an aging David Perron and an aging James Neal. You don't want that to have to happen.
Yeah.
You don't need it to happen.
And because the Golden Knights have been in such salary cap heaven for the first year and a half of their existence,
sure,
I think a lot of people don't understand how quickly that can change.
Yeah.
Like it did this week.
Yes.
It's already changed.
So
they're no longer in salary cap heaven. That's over.
So let's get to that. Colin Miller re-signs. $3.88 million per season for the next 4 years. Are you a fan of that?
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable contract.
It is a reasonable contract. What does that do to Shea Theodore, though, when it's time for him to get paid?
Well, it'll be after another year. So he just played his first full year in the NHL.
Yep.
He had his ups. He had his downs. He definitely showed potential of being a top pairing guy that's dangerous on the power play.
Yep.
If he does that again and takes another step forward in his defensive end, he's going to get paid. And he'll deserve it. But I don't think this, and like everyone is using the phrase, Colin Miller, now the highest paid defenseman on the Golden Knights. That's because no one's getting paid anything on the defensive end.
Now, you have to assume, because Nate Schmidt's contract is up after the end of next season. I would assume that George McPhee is probably going to be working on an extension, so you have to assume that Nate Schmidt's going to be probably in the ballpark of $4.5 to $5 million per.
That would be my
guess.
So
you look at that, and we still don't have a number yet on William Karlsson. He's set to go to arbitration. I'm not necessarily sure that that gets to arbitration. Maybe there's a deal that's worked out between the Golden Knights and William Karlsson, maybe in the ballpark of $6.5 to $7 million per season. And then you look at the fact that this team right now has $14.9 million in cap space. That's going to go down pretty quickly.
Yeah. So let's just real quick, because you hear it all the time. People say, and by the way, this makes signing Ryan Reeves for all that money for 2 years look completely idiotic, by the way.
Well, the Patrick Maroon 1.75 is, my God. Like, Patrick Maroon can score. Like, he can play on the second and third line if you need him to. And this is a guy that played with Connor McDavid, for Christ's sake. Like, he's making $1 million less than Ryan Reeves.
And the argument...
And I like Ryan Reeves.
And the argument when they signed Ryan Reeves to that ridiculous amount was, well, they just gave him the amount he was going to make in 3 years in 2 years because it doesn't matter with cap space. Yeah. But guess what? All of a sudden it does matter because
now it does.
They've got $14.8 million.
Yep.
$14.9 million, whatever it is. It's something like that.
Yeah, $14.9.
$14.9 million. William Karlsson is getting not a penny less than $5 million.
For sure.
No chance he gets less than $5
million. Man, I would say that's probably closer to five and a half. But I mean,
Let's just say five because it cannot be lower than that.
So then you're at 9.9.
You got $10 million.
$10 million bucks.
Tomáš Nosek is going to get $1 million, maybe two.
Yep.
All of a sudden, that's
$7.9
million. Yep. Where's all that money for Erik Karlsson and Bobby Ryan?
Well, there's money for Erik Karlsson. And there's money for
Ryan.
There's money for one or the other, but you have to assume that you're shipping something out. But
you're shipping Shea Theodore out, which makes nothing.
Well,
he makes nothing.
See,
and you're shipping Cody Glass out, who makes nothing.
Well, not if you ship out Cody Eakin.
Well,
if you can attach Cody Eakin to that.
What does Cody make? Three? Four?
Let me look it up right now. Cody Eakin is making $3.85 million.
So, okay, so we signed
over Karlsson. The next two.
Yeah, so you signed Karlsson, you signed Nosek, we're down to $7 million. You ship out Eakin. That's still, even with getting rid of Eakin, that's still only $10 million in cap space. Erik Karlsson's going to make more. I mean, Erik Karlsson's going to make more than $10 million a year when you sign
him. Erik Karlsson's at 11.5.
So, all of a sudden, I just think that it's funny that like a month ago it was, pay Ryan Reeves whatever he wants, pay James Neal whatever he wants, pay David Perron whatever he wants. We got so much salary cap, it doesn't matter. Now all of a sudden it's like, man, are we going to have enough money to pay our players?
Now, like, the David Clarkson contract, he's on long-term IR, right? So,
yes. So
with that, because it's hard for me sometimes to keep track of all that stuff. So David Clarkson's 5.25, is that counting against the cap right now?
It doesn't.
So this is
on long term.
So we're talking 14.9 without Clarkson's 5.25.
Let me look at it to make sure that that's not counted in it, because let's see, totals.
Because at that point, maybe Pierre Dorion can get creative with David Clarkson coming back the other way. So he's still gaining $2.5 million in salary by offloading Bobby Ryan and getting rid of Erik Karlsson. But maybe if it's a salary dump for Vegas, getting rid of Clarkson for Ryan, maybe Dorion can get more of the pieces that he wants for Erik Karlsson. Maybe it's a way for him to maybe get a better deal, better pieces coming back the other way.
Yeah.
Then again, Pierre Dorian's not smart enough to think about that.
And this is another thing. And like, I know I've always been on the, I feel like I love Erik Karlsson so much, but for some reason, I always end up on the other side of this trade arguing against it. So here I am again. When you take on these contracts, it's not just for this season. And like right now, what we're doing is we're jumping through mathematics and we're going through these hoops to try to make it fit this season.
Right.
Now, you're going to sign Karlsson to a 7 or 8 year deal worth $11 million a year.
Sure.
And you're going to have Bobby Ryan for, what, four more years? Five more years?
I think it's 4 years. So you play him for three, you buy him out in the last year.
But you still are going to have to pay. So let's just say three after until the buyout.
Sure.
So for the next 3 years, you're going to have Bobby Ryan's $7.25 million. And Erik Karlsson's, that's $18 million in cap.
But again, you're also
going to have all these other guys, Shea Theodore, Nate Schmidt. All these guys are going to need to get paid.
Well, Theodore won't because he's going to be in Ottawa.
Erik Hall is going to need to get paid.
No,
William Karlsson is going to need a long-term contract.
I completely understand
what
you're saying.
Cody Glass, Nick Suzuki, Eric Brännström, Nick Hag.
It's interesting. It really is. And you know, it's difficult to sit here and think about $5.3 million over the next 3 years for Tomáš Tatar. Now, maybe he will live up to that. Maybe he'll be fine, but then you start thinking about maybe that's a guy that you include in a package. If you're trying to
but
bring
why him would they want him?
Why would they want him? Because he's cheaper than Bobby Ryan.
Barely.
It doesn't matter. It's still cheaper.
But
Eugene Melnyk wants to do is save money. He doesn't but he doesn't care about the team.
Yeah, but he wants to save the $7 million. He doesn't want to save only $2 million.
Yeah, but if you look at a player like Tomáš Tatar at 5.3, he's a better all-around player and more valuable than Bobby Ryan is at 7.25.
He's better. I wouldn't say he's better all-around. Tatar doesn't do much but score.
Bobby Ryan doesn't do much of anything.
That's true.
He's really not good.
Yeah. No, but anyways, so like I just said, that this trade could end up... Look, I've been against it this whole time.
Yes,
Golden Knights fans despise me for it. They all want it. I'd say it's 90% of fans want Erik Karlsson. When you lose one of your young stars that you love, like Erik Haula,
mm-hmm.
or like Cody Glass, or like Shea Theodore, don't say I didn't tell you so. This is going to create salary cap, not just, and I'm not saying you're going to lose them in the trade. I'm saying you're going to lose them later down the road because you can't afford them.
Yeah, the thing that's going to be interesting, I think, if you bring in, you know, if you end up bringing in Erik Karlsson, you bring in Bobby Ryan, you have to realize that that may mean Nate Schmidt does not re-sign here. And that's something that I don't think anyone really thought about or hasn't really thought about, but he's going to be due for a raise, and it's going to be in the ballpark of what we were talking about, between $4 and $5 million.
And Hall is going to be due more than
and
that.
Hall is probably due more than that, depending on where he plays next year.
Scored 29 goals this year.
No, I get it. I understand that. But do you, if you're George McPhee and if you're Gerard Gallant, do you view Erik Haula as a third-line center or a second-line winger? And what is he going to do with either one of those roles?
If he's
a third line center, and Ken from Sinbin's been talking about this for weeks now, I want to see Erik Haula as a third line center, and I want the third line to focus on scoring goals.
Yeah.
If he does that, then he's going to be worth a lot of money. A lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. So if he's a what I think they don't view him as a third line center. I think they view him as a second line center who's playing on the third line. That's going to give us second line production from the third line, which would be spectacular.
That would be good. And so the more, you know, the longer that this Karlsson stuff drags on, the less likely I think it actually happens for Vegas, but the less likely I think it happens at all. Like Pierre Dorion's done a really good job at leaking information through the media to create this bidding war for this asset that everybody knows he has absolutely no leverage in the situation, and yet a deal still hasn't been made, and I don't think anything's really close. What's your gut telling you on Erik Karlsson?
My gut's telling me the same thing it's been telling me from the very beginning. I think George McPhee gave him an offer and said, this is my offer.
Sure.
There is no negotiating. There is no counter offers. Either you come to me with the trade or don't call me. Don't come to me with any other offers. This is what you're getting for him.
So my question then is this: Does anyone believe that Pierre Dorion's going to make the right move in this situation? Because I think the right move would probably be, hey George, let's do it. Because I don't think Dallas is as in it as everyone's reporting them
to
be.
Well, they want Hiskanen. You're out of your freaking mind.
But with Erik Karlsson, is any prospect safe when you're talking about Erik generational Karlsson?
Yeah, Erik, I'm going to be a free agent in a year, Karlsson.
That's a good point. I agree.
Erik Karlsson is worth, because if Erik Karlsson had 5 years left on his deal, you trade every prospect in your entire...
It's a good point.
But he's not worth that because he's going to be a free agent in a year.
Assuming you don't re-sign him, which is why I think a deal predetermined on him being signed long-term.
No, but what I'm saying is, I'm not even saying he's going to be a free agent for the team that trades for him. I'm saying Ottawa has no leverage because he's gone
exactly,
in a year.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to give you, like, if Ottawa had him for 5 years and they don't have, if I'm Ottawa, I don't have to trade him. I can just keep him. Now all of a sudden you have more leverage.
So,
they don't have any.
So no, you don't have any leverage. So my question then, I guess, is this, because I have no faith in general managers whatsoever when it comes to the NHL. I especially have no faith in Pierre Dorion. I mean, the Matt Duchene trade, I mean, could not have gone any worse for him. Or Matt Duchene, but the fact that the Colorado Avalanche own their first round pick next year and this dumpster fire is going to be on the ice next year, it just speaks volumes to how horribly mismanaged this team is. But I think my absolute favorite way that this plays out is that Pierre Dorion bluffs himself out of three different trade potentials, goes into the season with Erik Karlsson, doesn't get anybody calling on deadline day, and Erik Karlsson walks for nothing. That's my dream scenario. And that's, like, to me, I feel like every day that something doesn't get done, we're getting closer to that.
I agree.
And how much of a disaster would that be for Ottawa? I mean, granted, the fans, they're not going to give a shit because they'll have Erik Karlsson for the next year. And even though they know that he's going to be gone in free agency, at least they'll get to do the victory lap one more time around the league and all this stuff. But I really think that it will destroy this organization. It hasn't already done so.
The only thing I will say about that, though, is that if I'm Ottawa and the season starts, I'm not talking about trading him until the deadline comes. And then when the deadline comes, you're going to have teams, like right now, the only teams that are trying to trade for Erik Karlsson are teams that think he's going to sign long-term with
him.
At the trade deadline, all of a sudden, some other trade opportunities might open up because a team that knows he's not going to re-sign or thinks he might not re-sign but just wants him for the run. Whereas you don't make a trade for this run before the season starts because then if you're 10 games out of the division, then you look like an idiot. But at the trade deadline, if, I don't know, just let's like say Winnipeg looks like an absolute monster at the trade deadline and they say, you know what, he might not re-sign. Oh, well, let's get us a cup.
But
all of a sudden, you have more teams other than just these three.
Understand.
To trade.
But you're not going to get a better package than you're going to get right now.
No, but you'll get something.
But, I mean,
so
no matter what he does, whatever the return is going to be, it's not going to be enough. But
of course.
It's certainly not going to be enough at the trade deadline.
Yeah, but I'm just saying,
I mean, no, I hear
he's not going to walk for nothing. I think at the trade deadline, you all of a sudden there's like 10 more teams that come calling, and like they're not going to give you something great.
He's going to get traded
for
like three draft picks. He's going to get traded for a first, a second, and a third.
Yeah, Tomas Tatar trade.
Exactly. So, where do you care that John Tavares left the Islanders? Like, do you feel that he was not truthful with that organization?
No.
Yeah, neither do I.
No, I think he was within his rights.
Did you read his Players Tribune article?
Yes.
Okay. At no point during that article did I read it and say, you know what? John Tavares lied to the Islanders, and it's his fault that they are a train wreck right now.
No, but I completely agree.
Yet, that's the basically the argument I got from most people on Twitter.
Well, Islanders fans are upset.
But it's not even Islanders fans. It's just people like, oh, it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to Toronto. Was it?
No.
Well, if it was, then why didn't Gar Snow trade him at the deadline?
Yeah, I think John Tavares wanted to stay in New
York. I completely agree.
And he wanted them to turn it around, and he wanted them to build something around him, and he gave them till the last
possible single opportunity. Yeah.
And then finally it's like they're not going to. And I think what happened was all he's known is the Islanders his whole NHL career.
Yeah.
The only way he understands an NHL team operates is the way the Islanders operate, which is shitty.
Yeah.
But now he goes up to Toronto, who let's not make Toronto out to be this like awesome organization, but they got a lot of money and they have a lot of resources and they've got facilities. And I think he went up to Toronto and they gave him his their vision.
Sure.
And he was like, wow, this is what an actual NHL team that's trying to win sounds like. And then he left. But he didn't, it wasn't, it was never a, yeah, no, don't trade me. I'm going to stay. Haha, suckers. Can't wait to leave.
I completely agree. And I think the thing that I find so fascinating about this entire situation is the Islanders do nothing for the 9 years that John Tavares is there. They don't really make themselves into a good team. He has teammates that he plays with, and Kyle Okposo and Franz Nielsen that he has great chemistry with. And what happens? Trade him away. You don't sign him in free agency. And then you're gifted Matt Barzal, and you have all these young talents that you could probably turn into something. And Garth Snow just doesn't know how to manage the team. Just simply doesn't know how to do it. And by all accounts, John Tavares has a great relationship with Garth Snow. He had a great relationship with Doug Weight, who I forget was the captain on Long Island when Tavares was drafted and was his coach the last season. And then what do? The only thing that he knew was that organization and the people that were running it. And he goes into a room with Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz pitching him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know you guys. I don't have any allegiance to you.
Yeah.
And for all the people that are like, oh my God, he let the fans down. He should have been more honest. Like, how was he supposed to know that last year to this year, he would be pitched by Lou Lamoriello representing the Islanders? Like, yeah. it's so incredibly insane.
Yeah, this wasn't him telling people that have been with him his whole career no. Mm. He has no more connection to the people at the Islanders pitching him than he does to the people at San Jose or Toronto or whoever else was pitching him.
It blows my mind the amount of pushback that he's getting. And, like, I get it from Islanders fans, but, like, I don't really get it from hockey Twitter at large. Like, the guy's entering the one chance he has to choose where he wants to play and for how much money.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else would have gotten to that point and said, you know what? I'm here now. I might as well just see what's out there.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. I have no doubt in my mind that that's what he did.
My favorite thing is that sports fans in general hold athletes to much higher standards than they do themselves. That's my favorite part, because if you are a, I don't know, let's just pick some random job. What's a random job? Say you're a pizza delivery person.
There you go.
And you work for Domino's.
Mm-hmm.
And you make $13 an hour.
A good number.
Pizza Hut calls up and says, we'll offer you $21 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You're a piece of shit if you're not loyal to Domino's.
Yeah.
How could you possibly betray Domino's? They trained you. You didn't even know how to deliver pizza. They trained you.
Exactly.
You have a friend that works at Domino's with you. Your boss really likes you. He sent you a birthday card last year, and you betrayed him to go to Pizza Hut for more money. But any logical human would obviously go to Pizza Hut because they're paying you more. But for some reason, I don't know why, fans hold athletes to a different standard.
Some athletes.
Most.
Because
athletes.
Patrick Maroon came to the New Jersey Devils trade deadline. The New Jersey Devils gave up assets to acquire Patrick Maroon. By all accounts, the New Jersey Devils made Patrick Maroon an offer in free agency that was a little bit more lucrative than the deal that he signed in St. Louis. Patrick Maroon turned down more money and term from the New Jersey Devils to go play at home for the St. Louis Blues.
And be
loyal.
Why
isn't he a piece of shit?
Well, that's the thing. So, no, but I guarantee there are people in New Jersey that are mad at him for being loyal and saying he should have taken more money. So if you take more money, it's bad. You should have been loyal. If you're loyal and take less money, it's bad. You should have taken more money, you idiot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like people the standards they hold athletes to, especially in free agency and choosing where they, like, if a guy wants to live in a certain city, who are you to tell him he should not be able to live in that city? That's ridiculous.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because Artemi Panarin doesn't like Columbus.
Yeah.
And he's not open to signing an 8-year contract extension with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's come out, his agent has said he loves the organization. He loves the coaching staff. He loves the players. He likes where he is. But unfortunately, the Blue Jackets play in Columbus. And he likes it now, but he doesn't know if he's going to like it for 8 years. And the best part about that is people are using Artemi Panarin coming out and saying, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to sign here long term, as some type of damnation of John Tavares, because apparently those situations were completely the same. And Artemi Panarin did the stand up thing by saying, screw your organization, I hate where you play. Because apparently that's better than saying, you know what, I'm an Islander, I want to stay an Islander, I want to be here for the long term. Oh my God, I have a chance to play for the Leafs, and it's like an actual thing, and they sold me on it, and I didn't think it was ever possible, but now here it is. I'm going to take that. Like, man, free agency is wild. It really is. If you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, what do you do with Artemi Panarin? You try to trade him now?
No.
Do you try to trade him at the deadline, or do you hope that maybe you can come together on like a 4 or 5 year deal?
No, I try, because I think it's worth the chance of you signing him to keep him, because I think he's really good.
Yeah, no, completely agree.
So I say, if I'm the Blue Jackets, I try to continue winning him over until now. Once you reach a point where at the trade deadline, all of a sudden, now if he's not committing, you have to. And depending on where you are, also, if you're in first place and you think you can make a cup run, let's keep Panarin. Even if he leaves us, I think it's worth it having this chance to make this cup run. And if we make a deep run, he's more likely to end up signing with us in the end. But if you get to the trade deadline, you're in fourth place.
Sure.
And he's still saying, I'm probably not going to sign with you. You got to trade him.
No, I agree with you there. And the thing with Panarin that I find interesting is he had a really good season last year. The questions going into the season were, can he do it without Patrick Kane?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he can. But I don't know that we've seen his ceiling yet. His ceiling could be 9,802 points. And if it's that, then absolutely it makes zero sense for him to sign an extension right now. Double down on yourself and make that $9.5, $10 million when it comes time to sign an extension.
Agreed.
There's no rush. Like, Drew Doughty, I get that you want to be a king forever. That's fine. There's absolutely no rush, really, to sign an extension right now when you're not even due to hit the market until next season. I mean, unless you feel like
unless you get a monster offer like they gave a Doughty.
Yeah, but I still think Doughty left some money on the table.
$11 million a year.
I don't know. I look at Drew Doughty. I could see him having a really big, like, just imagine if he had a really, really big season this year and wins another Norris.
Yeah, but he's had 12. Big seasons before. It's but not I'm like saying, he came out of nowhere.
No,
he's
I
not
know
Panarin
that.
or like William Karlsson. Like, everybody knows at this point. Like, he's top 3 or 4 defensemen in the NHL.
Still think he probably left some money on the table.
Yeah, maybe.
You manufacture a little bit of a bidding war. Toronto's interested in you next offseason. You could probably squeeze some more money out of the Kings.
I agree, but I think when it's like, how different is my life going to be if I have $88 million? Or if I have $95 million, is my life really going to be that much
in L.A.,
different?
That might mean something.
It
costs
that much to park.
Exactly. Think about it that way. Let's get to another GM that I can't stand, Marc Bergevin, out in Montreal. Doesn't disclose Shea Weber's injury until after free agency ends, which to me is just really funny. Like, hey, come play with us. We are great. And by the way, wouldn't you want to play on a team with Shea Weber?
Oh, yeah.
You committed. That's great. He's actually out till December. Sorry about that. No big deal, really. So there's that. Marc Bergevin not being exactly truthful. But then he comes out and says the team has zero interest in signing an extension with Max Pacioretty. So whatever leverage you had about maybe that aspect of things being kept on the down low, you don't have anymore. Now teams know that Pacioretty's either going to walk for nothing next year or you're going to have to trade him. Like, what?
Same as the Erik Karlsson
situation. Why are you getting rid of your leverage?
Yeah,
you don't have to tell anybody that.
It makes no sense.
It's, and, like, what do you think you're going to get from Max Pacioretty now?
Not much.
You're not going to get much, but, like, you're certainly not going to get a top-line center, which is what you need.
Yes.
And I don't necessarily think you'd get that without this knowledge, but you're certainly not getting it now. And he's under contract for another 4 years up in Montreal. He's still allowed to make decisions, Marc Bergevin, for another 4 years in Montreal.
Well, unless he gets fired, but yeah.
Until he gets fired. It's not going to happen. I don't know why it wouldn't happen. But, like, GMs never get fired in this league.
Man, Pacioretty was bad last year.
But look, he had no one to play with.
This is true, but not good. His numbers are not good.
You bring in Jonathan Drouin to play a center. 25 games in. Yeah, he's not a center. You'd never allow Alex Galchenyuk to take any leaps or strides towards playing center because, he's not a center. When you don't have a center, maybe you just give it a shot. I mean, this team is going to be really bad, with the exception of Carey Price, which will probably make them a middle-of-the-road team. Assuming Carey Price has a better year than he had last year. And his $10.5 million contract over 8 years kicks in now.
Starts now.
So, I mean, the Montreal Canadiens, like, my God, what are they doing?
It's a disaster. Like you said, there's no reason to give that information.
And people,
including me, are always so upset with George McPhee for being so secretive. And this is why.
Yeah.
Because if you're secretive all the time, you don't risk ever giving out information like this.
You never lose your leverage. Ever. I don't get it. And, like, the games will be packed. People will still go.
Well, it's Montreal. What are you going to do?
Well, of course. But
Canadians are life.
At some point, you have to demand that things are better.
Is it weird that I want Montreal to be good? Because I feel like most people outside of Montreal want them to suck, hate them, right? Is that fair?
For some reason, maybe
it's because Carey Price and I like him. And
it's because Carey Price.
I want Montreal to be good. I think if Montreal were in, like, the Eastern Conference Finals, I just think the NHL is more fun.
No,
when
I completely
is good.
I completely agree with you. I feel that way about Montreal. I feel that way about Toronto, for sure.
I agree.
Love to kind of see the buzz generated around that team should they make a deep playoff run.
Winnipeg was fun.
Was really fun. I didn't have to take the 75-hour plane ride to get up to Winnipeg, but
it's just different in Canada. The sport is different.
I don't doubt that for a minute, but I am with you. I would like the Canadians to be good, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, they're awful. I mean, they're just not going to be very good.
And, like, I'm almost curious, like, which GM has put himself or his team in a worse spot going into next year? Is it Marc Bergevin? Is it Pierre Dorion? Or is it Lou Lamoriello? Because when you lose John Tavares, if your natural counter to that is Leo Komarov, Matt Martin, some guy named Ross Johnston, who's only scored 3 career NHL goals, and he signed a 4-year contract... Valtteri Filppula.
Has a guy ever gotten a contract longer with more years than the goals he scored?
I don't know. I have no idea. And Tom Kunackle. Like, those are the signings.
You know what? They have got great grit and depth. That's a Jason Pothier team if I've ever seen one.
Oh my God. They're going to be so bad.
I have no idea what he's doing. And this is why, Golden Knights fans, count your blessings that because this expansion team, like I've said it before, most expansion teams get awful GMs because why would a good GM be available to hire for an expansion team?
Yeah.
Usually when you're a brand new team, one, you're not a good destination. Even if there is a good GM, why would he go to the expansion team? That would be awful. I'm going to be fired in 3 years. And there just aren't good GMs available. Usually, the GMs available are the ones that have been fired. So, and Lou Lamoriello is thought of as one of the best minds in hockey by many people.
Yeah, maybe 25 years ago.
Yeah. So, Golden Knights fans, just be glad that you have a genius running your team, George McPhee.
Let's talk about
and
the
not one of these guys.
Yeah, let's talk about the St. Louis Blues because they were pretty active in free agency.
They look good.
Ryan O'Reilly comes in. They dump a lot of contracts and salaries. It was Berglund going the other way. Sobotka going the other way. Tage something or other.
They brought Bozak.
They bring in Bozak, which, you know, I think Tyler Bozak is a comparable player to maybe a James Van Riemsdyk. So
he's a solid third-line center.
Yeah, solid third-line center. And then David Perron. So have the Blues done enough in the offseason to close the gap between themselves and Nashville and Winnipeg? Because I think if you look at the Central, those are the two teams that really come to mind as probably vying for a division title.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That division is a beast.
Yep.
It's, I mean, even the bottom teams, even like Chicago, has players that can play. Like, you look at the bottom of that division and you look at the bottom of the Pacific, and it's the harmless Coyotes and Canucks compared to.
Oh, by the way, the Coyotes just made a trade today for Marian Hossa.
Great.
Great trade.
That trade will really help them win the 2012 Stanley Cup. If that's what they're going for. If their aim is to win the 2012 Stanley Cup, that's a great move.
No, you know who's going to win the Stanley Cup next year? It's the Calgary Flames. And I'll tell you why. Marian Hossa went to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2008 with the Pittsburgh Penguins and lost. He went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2009 with the Detroit Red Wings and lost. He went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2010 with the Chicago Blackhawks and won. James Neal went to the Stanley Cup Final with the Nashville Predators, lost, went with Vegas, lost. He is now a member of the Calgary Flames, and clearly because nothing ever changes in hockey.
Third time's the charm.
Third time is the charm. James Neal will be a Stanley Cup champion next season.
No, but back to St. Louis. I don't know if they've caught Nashville in Winnipeg because that's a high bar.
Sure.
But they've definitely gotten better with Bozak, and I just think him being a third-line center is a very solid third-line center. I think they're strong up the middle, which is what you want to be. Obviously, Braden Schenn is great. And you have the top-end talent on the wings like Tarasenko. They've got one of the best defenses in the NHL. If you look at their blue line, just Parayko, Petrangelo, Bomeister.
Yep.
It's goaltending is the question, and we all know you hate Jake Allen.
Well, I hate Jake Allen a little bit more because there's no Carter Hutton anymore.
Yeah, I don't think he's that.
I mean,
he's a backup goalie. They had a really good season, and he's going to go be the guy and be awful, just like what's his name in
Scott,
Carolina.
Scott
yeah, in Carolina. Yeah, it's the same thing in the NFL with backup quarterbacks.
Okay, yeah.
Goalies are very comparable because I think there are a lot of comparisons between quarterback in the NFL and goalie because they control so much of the game. They're so important, and a backup has a couple good games. They get a massive contract somewhere to be the guy, and it doesn't work. That's usually how it works.
I mean, can Carter Hutton be worse than Robin Leonard up in Buffalo?
Yes, you can always be worse.
I don't know. I don't know that's possible. Like
Carey Price had a .90 save percentage last year. It can always be worse.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of, to me, so the Ryan O'Reilly thing is interesting to me because this is a guy that on locker room cleanout day, on media day for the Buffalo Sabres last season, he complained about hating hockey and the love is gone and I'm sad, all that bullshit.
Buffalo makes people sad.
Okay, come on.
Oh, yeah, your wife's from Buffalo, right? I got to be careful.
On. Yeah,
no, I've never been to Buffalo, but it just looks
I've,
like
I've heard it's a lovely city. Like,
I'd
love
like
to go.
To freeze your ass off every
I mean,
day.
It's like any other place. You know, it gets warm in the summer. It gets cold in the winter. And I mean, it's a little bit different. I mean,
It's just like
Buffalo,
Vegas, except
Buffalo's
for
given
50
us,
degrees.
You know, Buffalo's given us a lot. That's all I'm going to say. It's given me a lot.
Wings,
pizza, whatever you want to call it.
Good with the wings.
Okay, but the point is, with Ryan O'Reilly out of the picture, a guy that had issues in Colorado, had issues in Buffalo, had issues everywhere he's been, now this is Jack Eichel's team. There's no question about that. Does Buffalo get better by subtracting Ryan O'Reilly out of the lineup.
Maybe. But they're not going to be good. I mean, but
no, I'm not arguing they're going to be good because I think it's going to take Rasmus Dahlin a couple of years to turn into or be that game changer that we all expect him to be. And once he's there, they're probably going to be a pretty good hockey team if they can get a goalie. And maybe Carter Hutton's the guy. Maybe he isn't the guy.
How old is Carter? I don't even think Carter Hutton's that young though. Like
I don't think he is either.
I think he's like an old guy that's been a backup his whole life and
had a good season. The goalie situation in Buffalo is what, Linus Ullmark and Carter Hutton? Is that what it is now?
It's not good.
I mean, is it worse than Robin Lehner? I don't know. Leonard's not very good.
It's very, very, very tough to project a backup goalie being a starter. It's every time it happens.
Watch, Scott Darling's going to win the Vezina this year.
Yeah, well, like every time it happens. Time
Pekarinen just won the Vezina trophy.
There were two great examples last year. Two great examples. You got Ranta, who stuck behind Lundqvist in New York.
Sure.
Who looked like a good goalie that could be a franchise type guy. You have Darling, who stuck behind Crawford in Chicago.
Sure.
Very, very, very similar. They both go to teams that suck, Arizona and Carolina.
Yep.
Darling looked horrendous to the point where you almost can't put him on the ice because it'll ruin him.
Sure.
Meanwhile, Ranta was great. Now, he had his injury problems, but he put up some of the best stats of any goalie in the league last year playing behind an awful Arizona team. So that just shows you, like, it's two almost identical situations. They go to two very similar situations, completely different results. So I don't know if Hutton's going to be good. If I had to guess, I would say probably not, because it usually doesn't work with backup goalies being handed the keys to the car. I want to see how old he is, though.
Yeah, it'll be...
Hutton is 32?
32.
He's the same age as Marc-Andre Fleury.
Maybe he figured it out, man.
I want to go back. He's going to be awful. That's disaster.
All right, so...
He's the same age as Marc-Andre Fleury.
Christ, that's bad. That's really bad.
No, I think Fleury's older. Isn't Fleury like...
Fleury's 33? So he's a year younger?
Man.
Hey, Connor Hellebuck signed an extension. $6.18 million per year.
Healthy, healthy contract. That's about right. That could be underpaid in a few years.
Maybe.
Because he's trending upward. I think Hellebuck and Vasilevsky are going to be two of the better goalies in the NHL over the next 10 years. and I think Hellebuck, if he ends up being a every year Vezina candidate, $6 million is worth every penny and then some. You got a deal.
No, I completely agree. The Anaheim Ducks, everyone's favorite team, they're going to retire Paul Kariya's number, and they're going to retire Scott Niedermeyer's number. Scott Niedermeyer will be the eighth person in NHL history to have his number retired by two teams.
Yeah.
Do you care that Scott Niedermeyer is getting his number retired?
He already did, right?
He did with the Devils.
Yeah.
But so, I guess my question, let me rephrase the question. Did he do enough with Anaheim to get his jersey retired there?
Yeah, so this is the way the first thing I saw when I saw the news of Kariya and Niedermeyer, I thought, wow, that's weird that they're going to retire those two players who I don't even remember as Ducks, because I remember Niedermeyer as a great Devil, and I remember Paul Kariya as a great Colorado Avalanche
player. Dude, that's revisionist history, because there was no way in hell Paul Kariya was anything but awful for the Colorado Avalanche.
I know, I'm joking. He was at the end of his career, and he played for the Avs, and he sucked. And same with Solani, too. But Solani was actually pretty good for the Avs.
Well, Solani had, like, knee issues, and then, and he couldn't play, he couldn't skate, and then he ended up rehabbing in an offseason, then turned into a great player again. It was crazy.
Yeah, he was actually good for that. But yeah, no, I think of Paul Kariya and Timo Solani as Avalanche players. I'm probably the only person
that's
in the world.
That's really weird.
No.
So I guess, no, I don't know. I had thoughts on this. I was asked about it the other day on the Golden Knights Insider Show, and I think the question was asked to me more to get a rise because I was having to talk about the Anaheim Ducks, and I hate doing that. But to be honest with you, Scott Niedermeyer captained the first team in California history to win a Stanley Cup. It'd never been done before in California. It's the first time. So now, granted, I mean, that was pretty much an all-star team on the ice every single night. It was ridiculous, the amount of talent. I mean, Chris Pronger was there.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the defense alone was ridiculous. Sammy Paulson, third line center, shut everything down. I mean, it was a great, great team. However, I don't really care. Like, I'm not up in arms about the fact that Scott Niedermeyer is going to have his jersey retired. I think what he did for that organization at the time was unprecedented, obviously, and sure, why not?
I think Korea is the star of that night, though.
They're doing it on separate nights.
Okay, but yeah, when I saw that, I thought Korea is because as much as I joke about the Avs, like I see Korea as like if you were to tell me like name the most famous duck of all time, like it's Solani and Korea, right? Those are the two.
Yeah.
So
well, Solani's already got his number retired.
Yes,
and then. But Korea wasn't on the cup winning team.
Yeah, I know. But they, like, he was just like, I don't know, maybe it's just nostalgia from when I was a kid. I remember Korea on the Ducks. Like, I think if you were to make a Mount Rushmore of the Anaheim Ducks, Paul Kariya.
Oh, this will be fun. Yeah, what is it? Paul Kariya, Timu Solani,
John Sebastian Jaguar,
J.S. Jaguar. And
he played like one season, but.
No, he was good. He was there for the cup win.
He had the greatest. The year they lost in the Cup
was
the greatest goaltending performance in the history of the NHL as far as a playoff run goes.
The best thing that happened to the Ducks in 2003 is that they lost to the New Jersey Devils, because it was that moment where Scott Niedermeyer was like, you know what, I feel bad winning Stanley Cups when my brother hasn't won any, so I'm just going to go to the Ducks and win one with him.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good stuff.
But yeah, so, and then you pick who'd be the fourth?
Corey Perry.
Yeah. Okay. Getzlaff. Put Getzlaff. Getzlaff, right?
I mean, I wouldn't say Getzlaff. I'd say Dustin Penner. He was more important to the team during the cup run than either one of those two guys.
I can see that.
But yeah. I would argue Dustin Penner, but that's just because I like things to be funny, and Dustin Penner would be the funniest choice of all of the rest of them. That's
who's on the Mount Rushmore of the Golden Knights? Their long, rich history.
Oh, man. We've four, right?
Yeah, and you're not allowed to pick coaches, GMs, or owners, because that's too easy. To put Foley and McPhee on there is too easy, so it's got to be players.
No, I wouldn't put them in there anyway.
Come on. That's the whole Mount Rushmore.
No. Okay,
Gallant, Dave Pryor, McPhee, and Foley.
I would put Dave Pryor on there first.
Yeah. No, but so players, Mount Rushmore, Golden Knights.
Golden Knights, Mount Rushmore. Let's see. Certainly not Vadim Shipachev. All right. I would go Marc-Andre Fleury.
Of course.
Jonathan Marchessault. William Karlsson. Alex Tuck.
Ooh, Alex Tuck on there.
I'll throw him on there.
I would go James Neal, David Perron.
No,
I'm kidding. I'd go Fleury.
Suck it, Granger.
Yeah, I'd go Fleury, Karlsson. Fleury, Karlsson.
You had longer to think about it than I did.
Marchessault, Derek Englund.
No.
Yeah, Derek Englund needs to be on there.
See, now I'm second guessing it because I'm like thinking about Nate Schmidt.
Yeah, Derek Englund needs to be on there.
What about the Mount Rushmore of playoff failures for the Vegas Golden Knights?
Alex Tuck, Shea Theodore, Lucas Spezza.
Lucas Spezza.
Poor guys.
Does he have a job yet? No.
I don't believe so.
Probably not going to get another one.
Like his agent said, no offers from the Golden Knights or anyone else, apparently.
Maybe
League
minimum might be looking pretty good right now.
I
like Luka too.
He's such a good dude.
But he's not good on the ice.
He wasn't awful until the playoffs. Until the final, actually.
I mean, that was about as bad of a five-game stretch as I've seen.
But Tuck and Shea struggled in the final, and they're great players.
Yeah, but Tuck... I mean, Holtby made the save, man. Like...
No. Like, but I didn't think Tuck had a great series overall.
He wasn't awesome.
And neither did Shea. Shea had a pretty bad final.
Wait, did Shea turn the puck over? Because I didn't see any of that stuff. That he made mistakes out there.
Were you not watching?
No. I'm just saying.
It?
No, that's what Gerard said. There were no.
Oh yeah.
When Turk says that he wasn't aware that he made mistakes, I'm just assuming that is a thing that didn't happen. So.
No, in America, the coaches lie.
Well, maybe Shipachev's onto something because that's.
They will not mention any of the bad things you do.
We're never going to get a guest from the Golden Knights on this podcast again.
Why?
I don't know.
I took their side on this whole thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. We don't like Vadim Shipachev because he doesn't like Vegas. We end it there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just cut it off right there.
Just cut it off right there.
Yeah. Don't even have any.
You know,
of this.
Ari's not going to do that. He's going to like, we're going to say it. And he's just going to leave it in.
No. Okay.
All right. So, Jesse, what are you working on? Where can people find your stuff?
You can find me at Jesse Granger _ on Twitter, LasVegasSun.com. I'm working on, it's slow off season right now. I mean, I just did a story on how they're growing youth hockey, had some cool numbers in there. Crazy number.
Yeah,
from all the stats that I was digging up for how big youth hockey has grown in the last year in Vegas. As a country, as an entire United States, youth hockey grew 1.2% last year. Solid growth.
Okay.
It's a solid growth. 1.2% is considered a solid growth, according to USA Hockey. Nevada grew 15%.
Wow.
In 1 year.
Wow.
Six and under, the age groups, they then break it down into age groups, like 18 to 20 is the oldest that they go, and then they have like 11 to 10, whatever. They got all these different age groups.
Sure.
Six and under grew 144% in Nevada. And I talked to Matt Flynn, who is the, I don't remember his exact title, but he is the head of growing hockey in Vegas, essentially, for the Golden Knights. And he was telling me he expects the 15% number, that's a massive number for growth. He said he expects it to be 30 to 40% next year.
Wow.
Hockey is absolutely exploding here in Vegas. So I have a story on that if you want to check that out in the Sun. It's been out for a couple days. Not a whole lot coming up down the pipeline. They're going to do a cool thing at the Golden Knights for some kids, some Make-A-Wish kids, which I'll tease it at that and not give any more, but that's going to be coming up in the next couple weeks. Should be fun.
Are you going to cover and live tweet the Derek Englund charity game?
Is that coming up?
In August, yeah.
Oh. So
we got some time, but it's not.
Yeah, hopefully I can play in it, right?
It's on ice, buddy.
Yeah, I can ice skate.
Okay.
I played ice for 8 years. Well, come on.
Play ice again, bud. Come on.
You play ice.
Well, maybe if I had a buddy that was going to like make me look better by saving the puck when I turn it over, I would do that. Maybe.
You got to get something going.
Yeah, we do. Have we talked about the Hockey Hall of Fame yet or no?
What is the Hockey Hall of Fame?
The inductees.
We'll do that next time.
Yeah, okay. Gary Bettman's going in. Did you know that?
Wonderful.
Really?
Gary Bettman's a wonderful man.
It's great. Awesome. All right, you can find me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. Rink Rats is actually now not just on iTunes, but it's on Google Play and Stitcher. So if you consume podcasts with either one of those two outlets, find us, subscribe, hit the like button, give us a 5-star review. Anything that you want to do to tell us that you like us, that'd be great. Or tell us that you don't like us. Say, suck it, Granger. It's fine. We totally appreciate that. I don't work on any writing stories or anything because I talk on the radio for a living. That's what I do. So until next week, we will see you then.